Hi, folks. My name is Amy Perlman. I'm a board-certified urologist with expertise in sexual, hormonal, and genitourinary health. And welcome to today's episode of Pearls and Perspectives. I have Dr. Utsav Bansal here with me today. Utsav, say hello to the crew.
Hi, my name is Dr. Utsav Bansal. I practice in Miami, Florida, and I am a minimally invasive oncologist and endourologist at Bemora Health in Miami, Florida.
And we recently connected because I used to do a lot of voiding dysfunction in my prior life, and now I don't really do any voiding dysfunction, and I was looking for the guy to send my patients to. So I asked a mutual colleague of ours, Dr. Justin Dubin, and I said, Dr. Dubin, who do you recommend? And here in the flesh is his recommendation. Now, what I like to do whenever I'm potentially going to refer my patients to someone is I like to meet people virtually and or in person, right? Don't we want to know who we're sending our course to?
Definitely.
And so we connected virtually, and then I asked you, what do you offer patients? So give people an idea. What are the different prostate procedures that you offer your patients?
Yes, for BPH, at Memorial, we offer quite a few different options, and it's all tailored to the patient. I think that's the main thing. There are so many options now available. In the past, it was one size fits all. Now, with all the interventions that we have, we really bring the patient in to help them in the decision process. But along that spectrum, we offer quite a few variety of options. We have obviously the standard traditional techniques of transurethral resection of the prostate, photovaporization of the prostate. Newer, we offer aquablation, UroLift, iKind, Optilume. And then for the bigger glands, we offer laser enucleation of the prostate, open simple prostatectomies, or robotic, obviously, simple prostatectomies as well.
You know, BPH management used to be so easy. I know. Like between like prostate cancer and BPH, it was like your options are
two options. Yeah.
Like TURP for open prostatectomy.
Exactly.
And I think many of us go into urology because we're early innovators and adopters of new technology.
Sure.
But with that, it can become overwhelming.
Right.
So we know that we want to offer a personalized approach to patients depending on their prostate anatomy, but like, how do you tease these therapies out? How do you, like, first of all, how do you decide which ones you're going to offer patients?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing with as we grow in the number of options we have available is getting good at a core few. And I know I mentioned that we offer a lot, and we tell them, listen, these are the options available that we have, but it may not be the best one for you. So we guide patients, first of all, based on that. I think to be, let's say, a BPH center of excellence per se, you should at least offer four procedures, but offering really any more than that, you can get by with just, you know, those three or four procedures. So that's the first thing.
Then really quick, what are those three or four key procedures?
I would say if you're able to offer something that preserves ejaculation, be it, you know, UroLift for a subset of population, aquablation, if you can do laser enucleations for the prostate. And then if you want, you need something in your toolbox for even larger glands. If you can do laser enucleations for the prostate and larger glands, fantastic. If not, then you need to be able to offer robotic simple prostatectomy as well.
Mm-hmm. What's been the most difficult procedure to learn how to do?
Oh, by far, laser enucleation of the prostate.
Yeah. I remember when I was at the University of Iowa, Dr. Brad Erickson was doing enucleation procedures, and I walked into his OR one day, and I'm like, nope. Because of the steep learning curve.
Yeah.
Nope, I was like, Dr. Erickson, I appreciate you, like, being open to teaching me how to do this. Like, I'm out. That's being out. How, like, at what point learning that procedure did you feel like, okay, I got this?
You know, I think, first of all, it's the challenge that is the fun part of the procedure. You know, everyone who's now brought up in the training period has done robotics. Mm-hmm. You can do a simple prostatectomy. Anyone can do aquablation or even UroLift, very short procedures as well. When it came to laser enucleation of the prostate, there is a finesse and skill involved. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the also exciting part of learning. But you do need, like the studies have shown, 30 cases minimum to really feel comfortable getting that range of volume, doing median lobes, not median lobes, variant anatomy. You need those reps to really feel comfortable because you can get lost very quickly and then it becomes difficult.
Yeah. Now, when you're explaining these different therapies to patients, what is something that you might say in that talk track that people say, oh, that sounds really good, or I'm not a fan of that?
Yeah, and I ask them, what are their goals? You know, all of these are quality of life surgeries, and that's kind of the main thing. What did they want to preserve? What are their goals? Do they want to preserve ejaculation? Are they okay with incontinence, potentially even if transient, for 2 to 4 weeks, if not a little bit longer. That's important as well. Some patients don't want a catheter at all. Okay, what options do you have for those patients who don't want a catheter at all? So then based on those, I give them every single patient a chart. And then we say, okay, you know, these are the ones that will work for you. And we narrow it down as much as possible based on their goals.
Yeah. Okay. So when you, let's say, mention to someone, you might leak some urine after your procedure. Some guys are like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, some of them are, listen, I understand that for instance, if a patient had a Foley for however X amount of time, and they're like, listen, I want a procedure that is one and done that will get me free of being catheter free. Mm-hmm. You know, I think laser enucleation of the prostate is a great option, but then they have to know, listen, you could potentially leak, not everyone leaks, and you may have a catheter for a little bit longer. And do you want to preserve ejaculation? People do perform laser enucleation of the prostate with preserving ejaculation, but it's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You know, studies have shown you may lose, and up to 70% of patients may lose ejaculation with a whole lip or through lip. Mm-hmm. And then based on that, we go from there. And some patients understand that they will need a diaper potentially. Mm-hmm. Again, not everyone. And they're like, listen, I'm willing to take that minor issue, transient mm-hmm. issue, for a better result in the future.
Yeah. So as newer therapies are coming out, and I know with the recent American Urological Association, like there's so many therapies that are coming out. Does that excite you, or you're like, darn, I'm going to have to learn a technique?
You know, I think we're lucky in the fact that a lot of the new ones that are coming out, for instance, Optilume or iTint, they are, every urologist can perform it if you want to. They're very easy procedures to perform, very minimal learning curve. So it does make the conversation longer in that these are the options available. So it is exciting. Mm-hmm. But I think also as we learn about all of these new options, it's important to really understand where the evidence is and how much can you help the patient. Yeah. I think that's the main thing too.
So at what point, when the evidence starts coming out, do you say, there's now enough evidence to support me trialing this therapy?
Yeah, a lot of them are showing changes in IPSS mm-hmm. score, Qmax. And, you know, you really have to look at how many patients are in these studies. How long has this been going on? And even talking to other urologists that have been performing the procedure, what have been their outcomes mm-hmm. Doing X, Y, and Z? And what have they seen? Even anecdotally, can be extremely helpful.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, it's great when you look at the actual published research, but like the real world experience with the real life patients is so valuable. And I think we probably both have some key people in our back pocket. If we ask them like, hey, I know you offer like 10 different therapies. What do you actually think about this one? We need the people to give us their honest opinion.
For sure.
So is there anything that you've heard like through the grapevine that you're excited about in terms of new technologies?
Yeah, I think, you know, Optilume does have a space. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these I really counsel the patients. Listen, I can do a procedure that will be minimally invasive, even less than 30 minutes. Some people even offer them in clinic, mm-hmm. be it UroLift, Optilume, people are doing the operating room. And you may get some marginal benefit, but is preserving ejaculation important maybe for 3 to 5 years that you can say, listen, this may help you for a little bit. You may need another procedure in the future, but this can help you in the interim and give you fantastic results and go from there. And I think that's where some of these newer treatments really have a space.
Yeah, awesome. So for people who, let's say, are early on in their careers, maybe they're doing a fellowship now or they're in their first like 1 to 3 years of practice and they're interested in offering some more therapies like what you're offering. What's your advice? Because I know we want to offer the treatment gamut, but there are a lot of practical considerations and barriers, shall we say, in terms of offering.
100%.
What are some of the challenges that you face, let's say, with your hospital system?
Sure. I think acquiring technologies is always difficult. A lot of hospital systems, if that is kind of the model that you're in, it does have to go through a very long process to get new technology approved. Mm-hmm. If that is the case, choose a few that you are really interested in mm-hmm. and you really want to be able to preserve and offer, and choose ones that, you know, you could use for small glands, you can use for middle-sized glands, and then even larger glands, and be able to offer at least one in each of those and choose based on that, you know, working with your hospital, which one really works. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, for instance, have chosen aquablation because the range of prostates that you can treat is a little bit higher. And it's also, you know, a quicker surgery compared mm-hmm. to, let's say, laser enucleation of the prostate. But then obviously the capital
right.
for that is a lot.
Expensive.
It's expensive. Yeah. So you really have to work with your hospital and show them that, you know, you are going to bring patients. And a lot of people are requesting, you know, that's the other thing, is a lot of patients are going to come requesting certain procedures. And Procept is very good about advertising. So, you know, that's part of it too. Same with UroLift. Mm-hmm. You'll have patients requesting UroLift as well.
So are those the two ones that people tend to be requesting, UroLift and Aquablation?
I would say, or laser enucleation of the prostate.
Oh.
Those three, I would say, are the most requested by far.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's say you have a person and they're preparing to go to their hospital board to present their, you know, requests. How might you suggest that person actually prepare for their meeting? Like, are there certain metrics that they should have researched?
Absolutely. And, you know, the representative for each one of these companies can be very helpful.
They have the sound. They probably have the one computer.
Exactly. They, well, first of all, will contact you no matter what once you start your practice. But more than that, also, they have all the information. They have flyers. They have all the hospital metrics. How can it be reimbursed? You know, they will work with your billing team and everything. They will even meet with your value analysis team if that's what your hospital has to go through the steps with you. And then you can obviously present that information. But they are extremely helpful because they know what has worked in other hospitals and how you can bring it in. And they are also very forceful.
Yeah.
And in the process, too. So they will definitely be on your side if you want any form of technology.
Really good advice. I mean, we have to come into these meetings prepared.
100%.
You know, and I used to think, being in an academic institution, that when I asked for things and people told me no, I was like, gosh, why don't they understand how important this is?
Yeah.
The reality is, there is a budget and there is limited amounts of money that they have to spread over a lot of people.
Absolutely.
People, we're not the only one asking for something. And so being prepared for those meetings is key, and reaching out to the rep for that company. This is not their first rodeo. They do this all the freaking time. They can give us the data we need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They are so well adept at what has worked in the area. They will also look at metrics at what hospitals in your area, what are you competing with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can pull all of that information to really show that, you know, this is a good marketing tool for the hospital system and things that what administrators are looking for.
Yeah. So I found this to be very helpful in terms of acquiring new technology, and I want to share it with you.
Yeah.
And maybe you've done the same thing too. I'm curious. Yeah. Because you mentioned, what are patients asking for? And so when I was at the university before my current practice, I had people specifically coming in asking for Rezūm. And we didn't offer, but that's what they wanted. And, you know, I deemed them good candidates for that procedure.
Sure.
And so, you know, I kind of told my higher ups, look, these people are coming in for Rezūm. We don't offer it yet. I'm having to refer them to Mayo Clinic, which I did, because, look, I'm not gonna like counsel someone against a procedure if they decided that they want, if they're a good candidate for it.
I agree,
right?
And absolutely agree.
Pretty quickly, we were able to
get that technology. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Have you ever done anything?
I have. We do that quite a bit, actually, and we're still doing it. No, it's the only way, you know, to really, because they want to show that you're capturing the population within your area in the hospital system. And say, if we say that we're losing patients, we use that not only in BPH, but in fertility and all these, you know, different fields within urology. No, it's a great tool and it works.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other like suggestions for people early on in their career who want to develop their portfolio of BPH therapies?
Yeah, you know, you need to market yourself too and really put something together that is specific to you and what, you know, what options you have and what you want to offer and kind of the range. You know, I think if the patient is able to take something home with them, it really is helpful. And then also gives them the time to think about it. What I do a lot of the time is I give them a chart and I say, listen, these are what we offer. These are the ones we don't offer. For instance, I don't offer Rezūm. And so I tell them, listen, if you want Rezūm, I can tell you where to go. I don't offer it, but you know, these are the options. And it gives them something to take home. And then we go through everything. And then they will come back to me and say, listen, call me in a week or two. Let me know, what are your thoughts on each one? They have the time to look into it and everything like that. And I find that really helpful for them to really digest the information. So that's the first thing. Have something if you send out. Exactly.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say is, again, choose. Don't try to do everything. As you mentioned, it is really important to stick to ones that are go across the range of gland size and ones that you feel comfortable performing. Again, Optilum and iTind, you can easily learn them. A rep will be with you for a lot of your cases. And even in the bigger ones, get reps. If you want to offer robotic simple prostatectomies or laser enucleation of the prostates and you don't feel comfortable even coming out of practice or even coming out of training doing it, there are a lot of areas, a lot of master classes that you can take across the country. And I know a lot of people who started that way.
Yeah.
You know, people, urologists in the 50s and 60s, you know, they're doing these procedures procedures and they're going and taking the time to learn. And there's so many resources available either through the AUA or multiple avenues.
Yeah, I think we oftentimes think that we have to learn everything we're ever going to learn in training. And the reality is most of what we do, we learn outside of training. But then the question is, like, how do you learn those skills?
Yeah.
And I, like, have huge respect for people who, let's say, were doing the open cases, the open kidneys, the open prostates for much of their career, and then robotics came out, and they learned that technique.
Yeah.
Because what happens is if we don't evolve with the rapidly expanding, you know, innovative therapies, we become less relevant in our field. And then we're kind of like convincing ourselves that the way we used to do this procedure, it's still equivalent. We all know it's, like, not really equivalent anymore. Yeah.
We're facing that right now. I mean, with the Singapore that's coming out, that came out with Da Vinci, we are very much looking forward to acquiring it. And it's the same thing. Everyone is like, I can do the XI so well. Let's transition to Singapore. And it's going to be a learning process. But in the end, we'll be able to help more and kind of continue with the trends, which is important.
Now, I like what you were saying. You had mentioned that exit strategy, or that one sheeter that you give patients, but you also give that to referring providers. I mean, you sent that to me, which I found to be incredibly valuable.
True.
Because ultimately, my goal is when I see someone and I want to make that referral, is I want them to have that information ahead of time.
Absolutely.
So they know it prepares them for the visit. But also, if they want a therapy that's not on that list, I'm not going to send them. I don't want to waste their time and I don't want to waste your time,
absolutely,
right? So I think that sheet is also valuable as people who are new in their practice. You're establishing your referral patterns. That's something that's really helpful to give to those folks.
100%.
Yeah.
And I would also mention, you know, again, it is really important to be upfront with patients that these are quality of life procedures. You know, the worst thing, you know, any of us can do in a quality of life procedure is make them worse. And I tell them, that's the first thing I say, is that these are quality of life. You really have to be confident that you're making the right decision. I'm here to guide you that these are the options available, be it 3, 4, whichever options you're offering. And I also tell them about prostate artery embolization. That's another one. You know, if you don't think you're a little bit older, don't think you can undergo a surgery, you're not interested in surgery, there are other options. You know, there is a 20% retreatment rate, usually in 5 years. But that's another option available to you. So that's the first thing. The second thing, to answer your question, remind me your
first. Oh, so for people who are like further along in their career, who want to just like stay relevant in the space, is your advice the same for those people as it is for people early on in their practice?
If they are truly interested in, and they didn't learn it in training, again, there are a lot of resources out there. Mm-hmm. The AUA has courses available, even at the conference, where you can go in and learn how to do certain procedures, HOLA being one of them. You know, Dr. Cranbeck and a lot of others in the field really hold a lot of sessions, if that is one thing you're interested in. If there's others that you're interested in, they will hold sessions. They will fly you out and do anything because, you know, they understand that there are a lot of urologists who have not learned these procedures, and they make it very readily available. And again, there are representatives for a lot of these different modalities located throughout the country, or even willing to come to your hospital, and they can work with your hospital system to even trial and be there doing your procedures as you start, for the ones that require less training.
Yeah. Do you ever show patients demos? Like the different technologies?
Yeah, you know, UroLift does have a video, actually video that you can put in your waiting room, and they can watch that as they're sitting there for your visit. Mm-hmm. UroLift does a really good job. And sometimes I will send them videos. I do have a website that I send patients to that also has videos on how the procedure works and what they can anticipate. So it kind of relaxes them as well. And also gives them more information before their visit as well that they can look into, be like, and they can also pinpoint which procedure are they leaning towards.
Yeah. So in a space where there are so many options, you need to save time when you're in the office, right? So you said you have that one sheeter, you built a website, and your website is separate from your practice website. So what do people need to know about that?
Yeah. So it gives them a little bit more information on exactly the different disease processes I treat, and also
it's your name, right?
It's my
name. Yeah.
Correct. And it goes over the patient guides that I give all patients to for each surgery. I have a patient guide that I give patients as well. And then all of them can be found there as well, so they can know what to expect. It just gives them a little bit more information than just knowing about me and very basically what I do, which is on my hospital website.
So based on your experience, do you think every urologist should have their own website?
You know, it's a lot of upkeep, and I think it's great, and you have to put a lot of time, you know? And so if it is something that you think will benefit your practice, absolutely. You know, that's the main thing. It should really benefit your practice, and you would have to use it and, you know, have your card available with the website and all those things. And it requires upkeep. And if you think you have the time to do that, I think it's great.
Yeah. When I was at the university, my sister and I created an educational website because, like, the university website was fine, but you just can't update it as quickly as you want to. And so that was the challenge. And so we spent a lot of time, money, and resources developing the website, but it was something that we could direct our patients to afterwards with curated information. But for people who, let's say, may not want to do a website, YouTube, right? I mean, YouTube is way easier to keep on. We just have videos. Do you have anything like that where you create a video where you discuss all the options and you say, hey, watch this one video?
You know, there are so many available that are so good. I'll write that I will actually add them to the website if I think they're helpful. For instance, Kegel exercises. There's so many options for men's Kegel exercises out there post-prostatectomy. You can easily use that link.
Yeah. So you just find the good ones out there and you don't recreate the good one. No. You just put the links on your website. That's lovely. Yeah, I think a lot of us feel like we have to create all the good content ourselves. We don't. Like for shockwave therapy, I offer it in my clinic, but I don't have a shockwave therapy video. Alex Tatum has a wonderful shockwave video. And I'm like, watch this video from Dr. Tatum.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the things, especially if we're early on in practice. Again, we don't have to create the content ourselves, or at least not all of it. Find the good videos out there.
And start slow. You know, that's the main thing. You know, first decide what you want to offer and then little by little build. You don't have to do everything overnight, which is, you know, the main thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it could become overwhelming.
What do you think your practice will look like in 5 years?
So I do both oncology and endourology. So I think the BPH part is definitely growing, which is fantastic. As more and more people are referring and everything like that, that part of my practice is absolutely growing. So I think the percentages of the type of population I treat, but I'm excited.
Is that good or bad?
That's great.
Yeah, because some oncologists might be like, I'm going to get some benign out of here.
No, I think those patients you can really help, and they're so excited to see you after as well, if they're catheter-free or peeing very well. I just had a patient, actually, whose wife said I could hear him from downstairs urinating. And that's, yeah, exactly. And, you know, that is an amazing feeling to feel as a urologist, that you really help somebody with their quality of life. And when they go on vacations and everything, they don't have to rush to the bathroom. The one thing I would also point that it's, you have to counsel the patient about the preoperative and the decision they're making, but also the postoperative, which I find also the website helps a lot with. A lot of these patients, whatever modality you choose, are going to have a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. Their bladder has to adapt to kind of being now wide open. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people appreciate the amount of urgency that they're going to feel. Mm-hmm. And so by telling all of these things ahead of time should also decrease the amount of phone calls you're getting in your clinic after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that to be a key determinant of which therapies I was going to offer. Is how many phone calls will this generate after I do the procedure?
Yeah.
And then what education do I need to provide to prevent some of those phone calls?
Of course.
Right? Not obviously because we don't care, but because it's like, this is the common thing that's going to happen with, let's say, irritative symptoms after resume. What do we need to tell them beforehand?
Right.
Anything else that you want to share in terms of like your practice?
Yeah, sure. So I work with Memorial Healthcare System. We're located in South Broward County, which is in generally North Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. And we are a growing practice. We have 5 urologists currently. We treat the gamut of infertility to cancer to obviously general urology as well. And it's been a very exciting group of people. We have 2 nurse practitioners with us, and we are hiring as well. And we're excited to be with
this guy.
Yeah, come out the bus. And we are, as we grow, we're becoming more subspecialized as well. And we are finding ourselves more within the South Broward County area, and it's been really exciting.
So where are you guys looking to expand in terms of subspecialization in practice?
We need somebody who does female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery. I know they just rebranded, their name has changed. That's the major one I think we're currently looking for. Trauma and reconstruction as well is another area that we're looking into. But we're also accepting general urologists as well and nurse practitioners who have any interest in urology too. We have a lot of patients, a long waiting list as well. And anyone that can help with that volume is definitely very excited and willing to join the practice.
So how did you choose this gig for yourself?
Yeah, you know, I think it was the mentorship and what I would be able to do. I really found that I'd be able to help this location, this area of South Florida. I really found a need, even in the hospital system. At that time, there were generally 3 or 4 urologists. No one was really doing the complex kidney stone cases that I do. No one was offering laser enucleation at the prostate and more of the complex BPH procedures as well. So I really found that this was an area that I could help and add expertise. And the other thing is, it's so important when you're choosing where you want to join your partners and what is the hospital system. Your partners can make or break your day-to-day. And my partners are fantastic. I really enjoy working with all of them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on
Thank you for having me.
It was so good to chat with you, and we'll keep an eye out for big things that you're up to.
Yes, thank you.
So where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter, definitely. It's utsabansal13. You can find me on Instagram as well. And my website is bansalurology.com, so find me there too. And there's new updates all the time on what I'm offering and what we're offering in South Florida.
Awesome. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.